Microsoft's Visual Studio Tools for Applications. What we're going to do today is go through VSTA integration, and I'll do a demo of integrating the application. So I'll go over VSTA very quickly, go through a deep dive of the technology very quickly, mostly because I want to do the demo and show you how the integration works in VSTA and try to spend most of my time doing that. And then we'll talk very briefly about some of the takeaways that you can bring from this. Hopefully the most key takeaway is that VSTA integration isn't as complicated as it seems. I've recently gone through the documentation for our SDK, and I realized that they're packing a lot of information in there, and sometimes it's not as clear even to me what it is that is intended by the documentation. So it's I can feel your pain if you have actually tried this by reading the documentation alone. So hopefully I will simplify this a bit and make it seem a lot less complicated. Okay, so VSTA, Tools for Applications, is sort of an outgrowth of Visual Studio Tools for Office. We started off by integrating Office into the Visual Studio product and providing a way of building add-ins for the Office suite, starting with Word and Excel, and then moving into Outlook. And what we ended up doing is we built this infrastructure that seemed quite useful for other applications to be able to use. And so we decided, well, this is really great. We have this generic way of doing things, even though we've specialized it to Office on certain parts of it. But there's a great deal which is fairly generic. And so we decided to create a toolkit that would allow other products to integrate similar to the way that we did with VSTO. So, overview, very quick. It's strategic to our Visual Studio family, which is sort of true. Interestingly enough, what we do is we take the Visual Studio shell and we create an app ID, a lightweight app ID, which is a very small component that uses the development environment, but we wrap it with a separate container that allows us to sort of isolate the details of the application away from Visual Studio itself. So you can actually have a shell pop up that looks like Visual Studio but contains a reduced amount of functionality insofar as you only see the projects that are associated with the actual application. So if your application, in our case, we'll be talking about the ShapeApp application, we'll have a VSTA that's specific to ShapeApp, and the only projects you'll see available when you go to create a new add-in will be the ShapeApp add-in projects, and you will see no others. It also doesn't have all of the wifty things that you would normally see with a full-blown version of Visual Studio, so you're not going to get diagramming tools to create class diagrams, that sort of thing. You'll just get the basic functionality of a compiler. Manage extensibility. So the idea there is, well, managed code seems to be the way we're going. We want to make managed code work very nicely within any environment, and we believe that this is sort of the wave of the future. So we thought if we can get the managed world incorporated into any application, that would be a good thing. So we wanted to give managed extensibility. We also have the standard tools and the frameworks available. Okay, this looks like a marketing slide. I'm pretty sure it's a marketing slide. Basically, most of this is fairly true. With this, we can give you, and I'll qualify why I say mostly true, because I'm going to look at this little middle one that gives developers part. The first part gives companies control over what's extensible. That's very true. And in fact, one of the nice things about the way that the VSTA product works is that when you have an application and it has an object model, you can control what part of the object model is actually exposed out to an add-in. You can isolate certain bits and pieces of the object model so that not everything is available. If there are certain methods that you don't want within a particular class, you can hide those. If there are actual classes you want to just get rid of, you can hide those as well. It works for both native code as well as managed object models. So if you have a native application, you can expose that out to the world. If you have a managed application, you can expose that out to the world. And you can control exactly what level of detail you would like to provide. Now, gives developers flexibility and control. Well, That's true up to a certain point, insofar as add-ins are kind of like a sandboxed environment, and we do like to control what a developer is allowed to actually do within this in this environment. And so there are some things that you can do with add-ins that are pretty flexible. There are also a number of things you can not do with add-ins that you would think that you might be able to. And we'll talk about some of those things. All right, and again, the end user is the ability to add logic to their applications, and that's really quite true. And that's one of the nice things about this environment is that we give an easy way to extend an application. Okay, so let's look at the technology stack here. Okay, so Visual Studio, this is an express version of the IDE. It supports VB and C#. It does not support F#. It doesn't support any other language. It's just VB and C#. Those are the only two. We have the dynamic programming model. The dynamic programming model, we're going to talk about very briefly, but I will not be able to show you an example of how to integrate with the dynamic programming model. But essentially, the idea behind the dynamic programming model is that if you look at the way Excel works with VSTO, you have as the root object the application itself, that's the kind of the workbook, and then you also have each individual worksheet. You have sheet 1, sheet 2, sheet 3, and so forth. The dynamic programming model is a way for an application to actually talk to Visual Studio while it's running and say, oh, you know what, I just added another sheet. So then sheet 4 pops up and all the infrastructure pops up there as well. Or I renamed a sheet, and then it gets renamed in the actual Visual Studio IDE as well. So the dynamic programming model is a way that allows the application to interact with the objects in Visual Studio. We won't be able to talk too much about that today, but that's suffice to say what it does. Altev 11 style integration, true. What we can do is you can integrate, and I'll show how that's done, the IDE with an application. You can fire up the application. You can actually develop an add-in while running the application. The application remains live while doing so. You can actually debug the add-in live within the application and have the application cooperate with that debugging. Macro recording is interesting insofar as that it kind of requires the dynamic programming model and integration with that as well, so that if you would like to actually do some modification of your application and record those gestures as code, we provide support for that. You have both in-process and out-of-process debugging, and I'll show examples of both. And then you have a simpler extensibility and, of course, 64-bit debugging. You actually do get 64-bit debugging. Now, that is kind of unusual because Visual Studio itself, of course, is a 32-bit application. So if you have a 64-bit application and you want to do debugging, what we actually do is we fire up the IDE in a separate process, a 32-bit process. We connect them up through COM, and then we allow you to participate in the debugging process through COM interfaces, so that even if you have a 64-bit application, the 32-bit debugging support will hook up correctly. Hello. Oops. Oh. Okay. Oh, I see. Just a big graphic. Okay, there we go. Okay, so the design time architecture. All right, so the design time itself is a fairly straightforward thing. It has a number of components. The VSTA project system is the project system that allows you to load a C# project. It aggregates C# or VB, so the project system sort of wraps a C# project and it wraps the VB project, and so it has extensions to those which allow us to communicate with an application and understand the details about an application. The Visual Studio DTE, that's basically the programming model for Visual Studio. We expose that out as well so that if you're an application wanting to integrate with Visual Studio, you get through it, get to Visual Studio through the DTE objects. An in-process host is an application or is an object that you write as a systems developer or an integrator that allows you to talk to our dynamic programming model. In fact, the whole point of the in-process host is to give you that channel to be able to talk to the programming model, add or remove detail from your application. And then, of course, you have the ability to add custom help. Okay, so the dynamic programming model. Actually, we sort of already talked about that. So you can see that you have an application object like this .carDoor.color equals color.yellow. CarDoor as an object would be a first class object that's exposed out by your object model, and we give you the ability to add multiple car doors. For instance, if your application is about cars and you wanted to be able to have a two-door car and a four-door car, you can have a project that just fires up and gives you two car doors, and then you could say, well, I want a sedan car, and I get four, you know, add two more car doors, and there you would go. It would basically allow you to do that, and then you have the ability to program against it. But we've already really talked about that, so let's go on. In process host enables the customizing of the design time experience. So the IPH does a number of things. You have the ability to change the icons that are available programmatically. You can change the objects that are available in the project itself by adding, removing, you know, worksheets and things like that, as well as being able to change how the debugger works. So you register the debugger through the in-process host, and also. The IPH gives you the ability to do migration from one version to the other. And so you will, if you actually want to have a VSTA 1.0 project migrate to a VSTA 2.0 project, you have to write an IPH, because that's the only place that you can actually install an upgrade helper that allows you to upgrade the project correctly. Things that matter, for instance, in that regard are if you have an object model change where the referenced assemblies change between version 1 and version 2 of your application. The upgrade helper allows you to identify which are the old references that need to be removed from a project that's being upgraded, and what are the new references that need to be added in order to make the project work. Okay, so end user debugging. There's a couple of things that happen in doing the end user debugging. When you use VSTA and you actually run the application from within the VSTA application, and you say, you know, you build your add-in, you compile, you say go, it will launch your application. Your application is then obligated to, in some way, load the add-in that you're debugging, and then we connect to that add-in and we'll allow you to debug. It's all done in process. If you want to run the application so that you have the application launching the IDE, developing an add-in within the live running application, the application is then going to allow the add-in to be loaded into a third process. If we run the add-in in a third process, the application just sort of sits off to the side and acts as an integrated debugger, and it basically will respond to certain debugging events that are raised by the debugger itself, and that simply allows the add-in to load a third process add-in, identify where it is so that the debugger can hook to it without actually doing anything destructive to the running application at all. So the external process debugging is designed to allow what we call non-destructive debugging, where the application can run a third process, the third process can crash, you can basically kill it any way you like with a debugger, but the running process won't be touched by it. Okay, so here's an example of how in-process debugging works. Basically, you're just running in VSTA, you hit F5, the application, host application is launched, and so is the add-in, and then you terminate the process and everything goes away. Okay, so it's, you hit F5, application comes up, you're done, application goes away. And it's one round trip. With external process debugging, your host process is sitting there, you launch the IDE, you hit F5, and a lot more magic happens in this case. So when you hit F5, basically the debugger calls into your application and saying, hey, look, we're about ready to start debugging. What are we going to do? The debugger then waits for the host application to get back with the process that's to be debugged after the application actually loads that process. When stop debugging is called, the host application is then called to say, hey, look, we're stopping debugging, and then it's responsible to tear down that third process and then clean up. Okay, runtime is based on 3.5. We have multiple levels of isolation, and you can choose how much isolation you want or how little isolation you want. You can get add-ins to be as close to your process as you like. In fact, it can be as close as really just a, you know, procedure call. You can get a little bit more isolation by tossing the add-ins into a separate app domain. Then you have to context switch of an app domain, but nevertheless, still pretty close. Or you can actually put the add-in out into a separate process. And then you have a bit more, because then you're going through thread switching across multiple processes. But we actually support isolation as, you know, as much as you like. One of the nice things is you can have add-ins into completely separate app domains, one per app domain, or you can have add-ins all into a single app domain. Advantages and disadvantages both ways. If they're all in a separate app domains, well, there's a little bit more communication going on, and there's a little bit more infrastructure and, you know, memory pressure, that kind of thing. But if an add-in goes away, none of the other add-ins are affected, and the application is not affected. If they're all in the same app domain, obviously, if one crashes, they all crash, so you have to be aware of that. Okay, the runtime architecture. Looks complicated, but in fact, you're responsible for very little in this architecture. Your host application has a host object model. The host object model is just some either managed object model, basic public classes with public interface of some kind, or a COM model, object model with, you know, some COM definitions of interfaces. And you want to expose that out to an add-in. The add-in sits on the other side of this big orange thing in the middle there, the runtime. The runtime has a bunch of components in it. There's the host and add-in views. And the host and add-in views are effectively how the add-in sees the application. That's the add-in view. So the add-in has to see the application, and it sees it through a window. And that window is the add-in view. The host actually sees the add-in also through a window called the host view. And that's how we provide the level of isolation that allows the add-in to, you know, be very badly behaved and still not interrupt the processing of the add-in. Hosting and deployment, if you want, you can do click once. You can have click once deployment, so you can actually install the add-in out into a server somewhere, launch it from that server. You get all of the relevant click once features that you would want to get out of click once, things like, you know, automatic updating of the add-in and so forth. That's available. And then also you have a migration available built in, and that's the contract adapters on either side. The contract adapters basically allow you to change the model, your object model, and still allow add-ins to talk to the application regardless of what version they natively target. Typically, if you don't have a cross-version problem to deal with, that middle bit you don't ever see. And that is added infrastructure and added weight that you typically will not see in a straightforward integration. Okay, managing the add-ins. The add-ins, pretty straightforward in that you can load them into individual app domains if you like. It's fairly straightforward. It's not that complicated, really, and I'll show you how easy it can be. But there are other ways to do it. You get higher performance by putting everything into a single app domain. But, of course, there's a lot less resilience this way, because if one app add-in goes away or is badly behaved, effectively they're all shot when we take the add-ins down. But also very low complexity. Okay, integration tools. We have two integration tools, ProxyGen and ProjectGen. ProxyGen is evil. ProjectGen is evil. But it's actually not that complicated. Really, they're not that bad. They have limitations that we'll have to talk about in terms of the types that they're able to actually cope with. ProxyGen is the one, I think, that causes most people the most grief, because it's a fairly mysterious product, the way it works. And we'll kind of go through some of the issues that are involved, but it's not as bad as I hope, or you go away thinking it's not as bad as you might think it is now. Okay, so let's start by looking at a simple project. This is the Shape App product. It's a very simple application. It's designed to do shapes, hence its name, Shape App. There it is, the lovely Shape App product. You can drag and drop shapes. So I can take a shape, I can drag it, I can drag another shape. Whoops. There we go. I could even go in there and change the size. You know, presumably I can make this 500 wide, and there you go. So I can. It's not that complicated. It's fairly simple. Now, the nice thing about it is, though, that it's a fairly comprehensive model in terms of what it exposes outwards as an object model. It has a top-level application which defines the application itself. And underneath the application, it has the document. So this whole thing is the document, and the document has multiple drawings. So it's also an MDI application, so you can have multiple documents. So the application has a document collection. Each document collection, each member of the document collection is a document. The document has a shape collection, or sorry, a drawing collection rather. Each drawing has a shape collection, and then the shapes themselves. And you have, you know, full control over the whole range of those objects. So it's not exactly exciting, but it is reasonably robust. Okay, so there's the shape app. Application. The first thing we need to do in order to integrate it with BSDA is get the object model out of the application and into a proxy. The proxy allows the add-in to talk to the objects in a way that's isolated and gives the application some level of control over the add-in, and also keep that add-in away from the application itself. So we'll start by going into proxy here, and I've created two little batch files. The first batch file will take the application. It, through reflection, will load the application, find every public surface exposed by the application, and will dump it into an XML file. If it was a COM application, I could take a type library and do the same thing. Find every public surface in the COM specification, the type library, and it would dump it to this XML file. So let's start with that. Whoops, it would help if I, there we go, now it should work fine. Okay, so it gives this message saying that it did something, and we can fire up Notepad, and here's what we get. A bunch of XML that just doesn't mean anything. Okay, so what does this all mean? Well, the first thing is we see that this was originally a managed library. So it'll say managed library. If it's COM, it'll say COM. Interface, there's an interface. That's the one interface that's actually provided there, the iShape interface. If we take a look, we can find structs. Okay, there's a structure. Word about structures, serialized structures. They do not get serialized by the ProxyGen. So ProxyGen cannot cope with structures. If the structure is already serialized, there's nothing to do. So unfortunately, ProxyGen could have chosen to actually take the structure and just duplicate it into the proxy, but it doesn't bother. It just expects you to do it. But effectively, it doesn't do anything with structs. So the first thing we'd have to do is take all of the structures and exclude them. So we go and do a find. There's another structure. And we're going to change that to true. Find one more structure. Change that to true. That's the first thing we do. Structures go away. Basically, that's because serialization of the structures is actually already taken care of by the structure itself. There's no work to be done. And so we don't actually do any real work there. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to find classes. Now, if you look at the class has a little bit another piece of information is add an entry point. The add an entry point is the level of objects that an add in would want to talk to or connect to as soon as the add in comes up, it starts to run. And so the add in, the entry point object, typically is going to be the application object. Whatever is the topmost level of your object model, that's going to be the entry point. In an application like Excel, we actually have two different types of application object. There's the application itself, and then there are the worksheet objects, because each worksheet is its own programming model top-level object and gets its own proxy implementation. So for our purposes, we're not going to do that level of complexity. We're just going to make the application be the one entry point, and that's really all we have to do. Define an entry point. Make sure you get rid of classes. If we wanted to, I could go in and say, oh, I don't want, oh, how about the type name to be available. type name property to be available here, and I could say exclude true, and then it would be excluded from the actual model. So you can just, anything that you don't want exposed out to an add-in, just hide it by saying is excluded. But that's all we're going to do. We're not going to change anything other than setting the entry point and the and excluding these, the structures. And then we complete the process by creating a proxy. That takes the XML representation and actually creates two files. I'll show you which the two files they are. There's the proxy.cs file and the host type map provider.cs file. The proxy.cs file, that is the proxy. The type map provider is a helper bit of code that you can use in integrating in the application, and I'll show you what we do with that in a minute. But the proxy is what we're actually going to do to build the proxy. So let's go ahead and build a proxy. All right, there's our proxy. We don't need that class. And in fact, what we need is that proxy.cs file. So we are going to go find that proxy.cs file. There it is. All right, there's the proxy.cs file. Defines everything that's appropriate for, in this case, the iShape interface. There are going to be some missing references that we're going to cope with in a moment, but basically it's just all of it's there. So let's go ahead and take care of the references issue. There's the runtime and system add-in. They go in pairs. Just need to add them both. And I can compile. Whoops. Okay. Some things you're going to see in the error messages. It says the type or namespace color does not exist in the application sample shape app namespace. Well, that's true. That's because we excluded the structures for color, size, and point. So you're obligated to add those back in. Now, I've already created something to do that, so let me go. Oops. What on earth? Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to do that. Oh, there we go. Add existing item. All right, I'm going to grab two things. So the first thing I'm going to look at is struct serialization. Okay, so here are the structs. Now, I'm going to position the screen very carefully like that. And then here's the original ShapeApp application. These are the structs that were defined in the original ShapeApp application. And I'm going to very carefully position the screen like that. And then I'm going to go and look at the old one. Okay, so that's the proxy serialization. And there's the struct serialization. Proxy, struct. They're identical. You don't have to change them at all. In fact, you just implement them straight across. The only difference is this line right here. So there's a serialized line, and then there's this line. This name, the host type attribute. When the add-in wants to talk to an object, it's talking to a proxy of an object. So all it really has is this proxied object. It's not the real object on the other side of the application. So you need some way to tell the pipeline in between how to convert the proxy object into the real object. And what we do is we use a canonical name. So you just define any random name. It could be Fred, George, Sam, Henry. Usually it's better to use a useful name. In this case, we call it the ShapeApp C#. Microsoft Visual Studio application of the whole namespace.color, and that will be used to translate from the proxied object into the real object and back again. Oops. So that's what that, now that we have those back in, that's fine. Another point of interest about serialization is that we don't know how to serialize your custom exceptions. We know how to serialize exceptions, so anything in the normal system namespace, argument exception, out of range exception, any of those things, we will know how to serialize. But if you provide a custom exception, you have to provide a little extra information about any custom constructors you have or any properties that you have in that exception class, and then provide the getObject data to serialize that custom data. So you'll notice that we have here for the load or location invalid exception, there's an additional piece of information called invalid location, and then we simply provide info about how to serialize that in the getObject data implementation for the serialization. So for exceptions, you just tell us what, you know, provide a little extra bit of information about serializing your custom exception data. Okay, so let's go ahead and compile, find out what happens. Okay, it says the type or namespace drawing and the type or namespace windows does not exist in the namespace system. Well, let's go back briefly, and I want to look at this yellow text up here. Proxygen warning, 21020, cannot load the following types. So basically, when you converted the proxy, it took the proxy and defined what was going on in the actual object model. And the object model has internal references to all of its own namespace, but it will most likely also have references out into the to other namespaces. Those namespaces, we don't do anything with. We expect you to have them on both sides of the pipeline. In fact, system we would expect to be in both sides of the pipeline. In this case, we don't know about drawing, and we don't know about Windows forms. So when we get done, when we get to the point where we're actually building the proxy, we're going to have to add those in. And that's all the warning is telling you, is that when you go to build a proxy, you're going to need to add those references. And that's basically what happened. So let's go ahead and add references. And we'll add those two in. There's drawing. And there's Windows Forms. And then there's one last thing. It needs to be GACked. We have to GAC the proxy, so let's go ahead and add a strong name key to it. There's a key. And that's all we really need to do. The build is successful and we're good. Okay, so we have a proxy. At this point, we now need to go and build our project templates and all of that. But first, we have to set up the infrastructure for VSTA. So I have a script for that. The script is designed to basically just register all of the relevant configuration items in the registry. So there is a Hive underneath software, Microsoft, VSTA host config, where you register what your application is going to look like. So you specify a host ID, any arbitrary name identifying your host, 2.0 for VSTA 2.0 as the next Hive underneath that, and then a number of parameters, the install directory and the application name, things like that. So we'll go ahead and start that off. It takes a few minutes to execute this because what it's doing is it registers those items in the host config area, and then it goes and it calls VSTA to do a setup. And what it's doing at that point in time is it's actually constructing the entire Hive in under VSTA for your application. And in that Hive is all of the information about how to launch Visual Studio, how to find the project templates, where to find the actual application, how to do debugging. All that information gets set up at that point. Now, in addition to that, this little script is going to also set up initially the project structure that's designed for the application itself. So one of the things it does here is it also adds in a folder for the app add-ins and the macro add-ins. Those are basically the locations where the applications will be installed and where macros would be installed or at the time that we actually want to execute. So it's complete. And at this point, we can now run ProjectGen. ProjectGen allows us to create, finally, the templates for the project. And once we have those, and we get those installed, we can actually write add-ins. So I have let me do one other thing first, which might be useful. Don't forget to install the proxy. That's helpful. Okay, we'll install the proxy first. Okay, much better. All right, give it a template name. That's just the name of the template as it appears in the templates folder inside Visual Studio's folder structure. A name for the template, just a simple description. A default name. The default name is what appears when you say new project. So when you say new Windows Forms application, it says Windows Forms application 1, and then you create another one, it creates Windows application form 2, and so forth. That default name, Windows Forms application, that's a default template name. You just pick one that's appropriate for your add-in. I chose Shape App C# add-in. The host identifier is Shape App C#. This will not populate unless you have successfully run the setup script and configured VSTA for your host. So if you hadn't done that correctly, that will not appear. Okay, the proxy name is just there. Base type gives you the base type. It's always specified there. You have choices there if you had multiple entry points that you provided. And then the host item name, this application. This application is just what we want to, you can call it anything you like. Convention that we've used in VSTO is to call things this workbook, this document, this application, and so forth. So I'm just going to go with that convention. You have the ability to specify references. Pick and choose. Don't take any of the way the ones that are currently there. That's a bad idea in general. You can add more, but don't take any away. And then provide a debug name path. The debug name path is actually where the executable is supposed to live. Generally, this would be your intended, intended location to launch the application when it's installed. So if your application gets installed, the program files, my company name / my application, that's where you'd want to specify. That's the place. I'm just having it point to the application where I've got it currently built. But you'd want to make sure that you point that to a sensible location. Okay, at that point, create the templates and then register those templates by calling into Visual Studio. Now we have to wait a while, again. There's a lot of waiting when we do this, so coffee is good. Have coffee available. What we're going to do is, again, we're going to call Visual Studio Setup. This time, though, we don't have to set up the whole hive. All we really have to do is just call in to install the actual templates, because we now actually have templates to install. In addition to that, we'll call Visual Studio, and we'll install the templates to Visual Studio. That means you can actually develop your add-ins for your application in the full-blown Visual Studio, as well as in Visual Studio Tools for Applications. Sometimes that's useful, sometimes it's not. And we'll only do it if Visual Studio is actually installed on the machine itself. So at this point, we're now doing the Visual Studio. We've already finished VSTA. Visual Studio will usually take a little bit longer. It's got a bigger project template cache. So we're going to take care of that. And it shouldn't take too much longer. And in fact, as soon as we are done with that, I'm not sure exactly how long this will take. Hopefully not too much longer. This is sort of like a game of Jeopardy at this point. Unfortunately, it's a big cache, so we have to walk through it. When we are done, we will actually be able to run Visual Studio Tools for Applications and develop an add-in. So you are effectively done building, the part that allows a developer to actually develop to your application. Oh, there it goes. Okay, so we're done. And so now you can fire up Shape App, configures the environment for first-time use, and that will take a few minutes, unfortunately. So you can develop, once you've got the application installed, there we go. Okay, I can say File, New Project, and there's my Shape App add-in ready to go. And I have it in the two languages. I've got it in Visual Basic, and I've got it in C#. I want to develop in C#. I can say OK. And you can see there's the application, and I can go here and say this dot, and there are all of the things of my programming model. I've got the active drawing, application, available shapes, and so forth. So it's all ready and available. At this point, I can write some integrated code, and I'm going to add an existing item. Okay, we'll grab this name here and open this up, and I'll change that name, and I'll talk about that in just a sec. And say this dot integration, whoops, I want startup, and then for shutdown, I want this dot integration, whoops, shutdown. Okay, whoops, there we go. And all right, so what this little thing does, just some partial class that I attach to the application, and it does a few things. It just exercises the object model, registers some events, creates a new document, some shapes, listens to those events, hopefully it does something useful. And so at this point, I can say, whoops, oh, that's right. And it also pops up some message boxes. There we go. All right, so I build. Build successfully. I can hit F5, and Shape App comes up. But nothing happens. Reason is that I actually haven't integrated the runtime yet. So let's go and integrate the runtime, and then we can actually do that again and see something happen. Sure, we'll save. We will save as that. It's perfectly fine. OK. At this point, we are going to integrate the runtime. Let's first go and get that file. And then I'm also going to get a couple of other files, which we'll talk about. OK, first things first. Host item provider. When the application, when the add-in first launches, it needs to get your root application object, and so it will ask for it. The host item provider is designed to do that. It's there explicitly to give out, dole out the top-level objects when asked for. It provides two things: the type and this cookie. Basically, it's just a string. Can be any string. This application works. In the case of things like Excel, when we do Excel, sheet 1, sheet 2, sheet 3, those are in fact the cookies, just the name of the thing. Something that we can identify back to an actual object inside of the running application so that we can return it. In this case, we have just the one application. If we're asked for an application, we'll return the application object. The host type map provider, that was the other thing provided by the proxy gen. And you can see it's just this huge thing of these dictionary table entries. String is the canonical name, and then type. And all it does is provides a two-way mapping, name to type and type to name. Now, the unfortunate thing is, of course, I excluded struct. So remember, don't forget to add struct back in. It's red, though. It's all squigglied. And there's a reason for that. The reason is that the default namespace that ProxyGen chooses is not sensible. So we'll make it sensible. That will fix that. The VSDA runtime is right here. Notice that there are a couple squigglies there. Again, we have references that we need. So let's go ahead and add some references. And I'll add in all of the references that I will need. I'm going to need design time, runtime, hosting, and add-in. Those are generally the only ones that you're going to need for interacting, doing both design time integration and runtime integration, the runtime, the hosting, and the design time, and as well as the system add-in. Add those three and you're pretty much set. Let's build and make sure we do good. Okay, we built. All right, so the VSDA runtime has pretty straightforward things that it does. It knows what the startup class is this application. It also has app level app add-in path. It's basically where the add-ins are located. The structure of the store to start with is actually a folder that then contains subfolders. Each subfolder represents the namespace of an application object. The executables or the DLLs inside that folder represents the DLL that gets loaded for the application. And then what it's going to do is find that namespace, the name of the folder, dot your root startup class, dot this application in this case. Okay. So word of warning, when you go and you do this install and you're using the find add-in function in order to load the add-ins, make sure that the folder name is cased correctly and represents the full namespace of the installed add-in. If it doesn't, things go horribly wrong, and you'll find that out. So during the instantiation of this, we're going to set the application object. We're going to instantiate the service provider. Service provider is the way that the add-in talks to the application. And what we're going to do is say that we're going to instantiate a new host item provider, and we'll also instantiate the type map provider, and then we'll return that to an application when it loads. In the loading of the application add-in, let's go down here. Oh, sorry. Oh, up there. We're going to look in the application directory, the add-in directory, find all the directories. We will then simply load each one of the directories we find, the add-ins that we find. We do find add-in, and then we activate an add-in, any add-ins we find. Once we've activated the add-in, we will then initialize it by passing in the service provider, which has, of course, the type map and the host item provider. Initialize data bindings, finish initialization, and then the add-in's up and running. Okay? Now, all of that gets instantiated by this. Connect to VSDA, creates a new VSDA runtime, and then just simply does a connect. And that will take care of that. And then the only thing we need to do is make sure that we actually do that part of it. So we'll build. We'll go back here and say open project. Oops. Did I not do something right? Actually, oh, I didn't do something right. Sorry. Let me actually install an add-in. That one might be helpful. Okay. Okay, so it's shape app C sharp add-in 1. And it's release. There we go. Okay, that would be more helpful. And then SA dev, there we go. Okay. Okay, so we've actually run. Documents created, shape is location, added to the drawing, incorrect point, no VSDA integration at this point. And there's a circle on the string. So we've basically integrated the runtime. It took me a little longer than I maybe wanted to, but it's there. Okay. In addition to that, oops, I didn't mean to save the document. In addition to that, we can do debugging. So if I wanted to go here, I can click here and type in a breakpoint and hit go. And now we're in the breakpoint. I can stepping through, new document, there's the message that pops up, and we have actually debugging involved. Now, this is all done on top of the application in process. So if anything goes horribly wrong, the entire application falls over and returns back to VSTA. So this is not the integrated debugging. And we can just go through there, and there we go. So I can close this down. All right. Okay. At this point, it would be nice to integrate the design time with ShapeApp. Relatively straightforward. And what we'll do is we'll get some more things. What we're going to get is we're going to get the design time. And we'll get that. That looks reasonably close. And okay. So in doing the design time, we're going to need a couple more things. We're going to need to actually be able to talk to Visual Studio. That's the environment DTE, ENV DTE. And we also need to be able to fire up Visual Studio Tools for Applications, your specific version of it, because it's your application and you want your VSTA and not somebody else's VSTA. So we provided a library called VSTA DTE Provider, which allows you to specify exactly the right parameters for launching VSTA. So let me go ahead and grab those two references. And they are COM references in this case. Oops, too far. There's the DTE provider library. And then, and Microsoft Development Environment 8 is all we really need there. Hopefully that should take care of everything. Excellent. So at this point, I'm very close to being able to launch, but I need to do one thing, well, two things, sorry. The first thing is I have a Connect to IDE button, but that was commented out because I didn't have a VSTA design time to work from, and I also need to connect to the VSTA design time. So that should take care of that. Good. All right, so let's look at the design time. Design time consists of basically the same types of things. I can connect, I pass in the application. I have the ability to disconnect. Disconnect will basically go find a DTE instance and make sure it shuts it down correctly. That way VSTA goes away when your application goes away. There's an ensure IDE function. The ensure IDE function is responsible for basically launching the application. And it's relatively straightforward. It consists of really this just one function. DTE provider.getDTE, and you pass in your application ID, your host ID, so that it knows which version of Visual Studio to launch. Once you've launched it, you have a DTE instance. You now have complete access to the IDE. Principally, you find the main window and show it. That will bring it up and running. And you can also register to some events. So we like to listen to the build events, the solution events, and the DTE events, and that gives us the ability to respond to things like builds, do things when builds happen, maybe deploy the application to the right folder. Debug events, obviously, we want to look at those at some point as well. Solution events, if the DTE environment goes away, we'll want to clean up as well. So in this case, we are looking at on build done, and on build done, we're going to actually deploy the application and load it. So that's what this process does. It sees that we've actually finished it. We're going to go find the directory where we want to install. Once we have that, we'll copy the assembly there, and then we'll actually go ahead and load those macros, the macros that we actually have. On shutdown, we just simply take everything down. Show IDE, you can see that we ensure that we have an IDE instance, and then we go ahead and we say main window visible, and then we will open the project or create a new project, depending on whether we have one or not. Okay, so let's go ahead and fire this up. 5 minutes? Yeah, figures. All right. Okay. So at this point, I can say connect to IDE. The IDE fires up. A macro project is created. And I can, again, say this dot active drawing and so forth. And so the application is ready to go. What I want to do is actually do something a little bit more interesting. So let's drop this down. Say no to that. Yeah, so is it okay if we continue for a few minutes while I finish this up? Or you guys want to just stop me and ask questions now, or What do you guys want to do? Keep going? All right, I'm going to keep going here. All right, so there is, in order to get integrated debugging, you actually have to respond to debugger events. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to actually hook up those debugger events. There's only three that you have to worry about. There's on before debug starting, there's on debug starting, and on debug stopping. Before debug starting, what you're going to basically do is you're going to ensure that you have a macro process ready to go so that the debugger can attach to it. When debug starting signal is given, you then take that process and give it back to the debugger so it knows how to actually launch the add-in. And then when debug stopping is done, basically tear down that process and make sure that everything is running. So those three events are basically all there are to it. However, you do have to register yourself as a debugging process. And the way that we do that is we do it through this thing called the VSTA host adapter. So you get the extender object in this way. It's a VSTA host adapter. Get extender, VSTA host adapter, 2007. It will give you an object that gives you the ability to basically do just really one thing, and that's set debug info. That's all you really need to be able to do with it. What that is going to do is it's going to register your running process with the debugger so that when the debugger launches, it knows to call you first to ask for context information about the executable process, and then all the rest of the debugging works the way you would expect it to. As long as you respond to those three events, you are cooperating with the debugger and you can control how the debugging process works. Now, in order to make that work, there are three things that we need to do. The first one, is when we create a new macro project, we want to register ourselves as a debug host. When we load a process, we want to register ourselves as a debug host. And then finally, if we actually had an existing project already and we knew about it, it was because it was already open, we just want to make sure we're registered as a debug host. Now, once we've done that, and we'll go through all, So here we are. We can connect to the IDE. And I can say message box dot show hello, and I need to add a reference real quick. Come on. Hello. Oh, I seem to have died. Oh. Well, of course it did. That was silly. All right. There we go. Okay. Build. What? What did I just do? Oh, I think I just killed it. Oh, I did just kill it. Dang it. My bad. All right. Yeah. Let's see. Where is it? Oh, well, that's going to be more challenging. Oops. Come on. Oh, that's no bueno. Dang it. No. Ah, sorry, I killed it. Well, I'm not going to be able to show you debugging then. Not easily, anyway. Let's see, documents.
Spend some time thinking of questions.
Yeah. All right. How disappointing.
So we're going to have this code and this demo available on the VSTA blog, which is blog.msdn.com/VSTA. So Tony will actually cover the debugging portion in there as well. At this point, we would like to open it up for any questions you have because we're already over time. So if you have any questions for Tony or anybody here, we'd be happy to answer them. So this is our contact information, and Tony's email address. There's my email address up there, and Amanda, who's in the back of the room. You can email any one of us for any questions that you have, and we'd be more than happy to answer you for it. At this point, we thank you for being here. Thanks a lot.